Move on to the next case, which is United States versus Matthew Higgins. Mr. Peterson.
May it please the court. Your Honor, this case arises out of a criminal sentencing in the Western District of Wisconsin involving my client Matthew Higgins. And it centers on the denial by the trial court of the acceptance of responsibility adjustment at sentencing. That is the only issue before the court. The primary thrust of our argument, Your Honor, is that the defendant did in fact accept responsibility for the offense for which he was convicted, and he did all of the things that are typically associated with acceptance of responsibility, including pleading in a timely fashion. He agreed to be debriefed regarding his knowledge of criminal activity in the Duluth Superior area where he resided. He raised no frivolous or groundless attacks on the proceeding or on the relevant conduct. He did, however, perform poorly on bond, on pretrial release. Acknowledge that certainly openly that Mr. Higgins did violate bond in several fashions. The court relied on that in denying Mr. Higgins the acceptance of responsibility. The court in so doing stated that as follows. Just as the verbatim quote of the court was that the court believes acceptance of responsibility is much more than accepting the offense for which you are found guilty. Acceptance of responsibility is that you do indeed follow the terms and conditions of a pretrial order, and that you do not plan to engage in any crime whatsoever because of the very conditions of your release could be withdrawn. That first sentence is what troubles me most, because I believe acceptance of responsibility is precisely about accepting responsibility for the offense for which you were found guilty, and that, Your Honor, is where I think the court applied a standard that was improper. The court also went on to emphasize that the government had the right to call off the plea agreement if the defendant engaged in conduct that was inconsistent with acceptance of responsibility. I think it's important to note in this case that the government did not do so. The government supported the idea of an acceptance responsibility reduction in the sentence. Did so in no uncertain terms. In fact, filed an objection to the pre-sentence based upon that position, stating that what had happened, Your Honor, is at some point Mr. Higgins' pretrial release had been revoked based upon these violations. The government relied on that, basically said that as far as they were concerned, the fact that that the pretrial release had been revoked was an adequate addressing of the issue of Mr. Higgins' violation of pretrial release.
I think a big problem for you, Mr. Peterson, is that you're overlooking opinions like United States versus Kirkland, which is the 94 opinion out of our circuit, which says that the defendant has to manifest a continuation of acceptance of responsibility, including the termination of criminal conduct and non-criminal behavior. And I think that's a real problem for you.
Well, Your Honor, please, the court, I think I cited the case of U.S. versus McDonald in my brief, which involved, I think, centered on that issue of voluntary termination for criminal associations or conduct or associations under 3E1.1 of the sentencing guidelines. Your Honor, in that case, the defendant had actually been tested for drugs a number of occasions and come up positive. But he had four positive tests for marijuana, one positive test for cocaine. Also didn't show up for several tests. And even in that case, Your Honor, the court seemed to have some struggle with the idea of whether that would be sufficient to revoke the defendant's acceptance of responsibility. I think
that the McDonald's helps the government.
Pardon me?
Don't you think the McDonald's case helps the government?
I don't think so, in the sense, Your Honor, that I think that the violations in that case were considerably more indicative of the defendant's continued criminal associations, and certainly positive tests for marijuana and cocaine would indicate continuing criminal conduct. So in that sense, I think it does not help the government because in this case, you did not have that clear pattern of continued criminal associations and criminal conduct.
Yeah, but doesn't the case basically hold that a court can consider not only similar criminal conduct to whatever is the charged offense, but any conduct that bears on whether a defendant has been acting in a manner that's consistent with accepting, responsibility?
I agree, Your Honor, but I think that's not, what I'm suggesting in my brief is that's not what the court did in this case. What the court seems to have done was said, even if he does accept responsibility for the offense for which he's convicted, he's got all this other bad behavior out here that would justify taking away the acceptance of responsibility. That's the way I read the court's statements and the way that the court seemed to have phrased its ruling in this case.
Well, what do you think a court should do with someone like Mr. Higgins, who continues to just flout society's rules?
Revoke his bond. I think revoke his pretrial release. I think is clearly I certainly don't in any way fault the court for doing that. That's what the court should have done. But I think the issue of acceptance responsibility is essentially a factual determination of whether or not the defendant in fact accepts responsibility for his conduct. And I think that it's more than just, it's not really, the denial of the acceptance responsibility, it seems to me, is not intended as a punishment for collateral behavior collateral to the issue of acceptance responsibility. I think that the defendant in this case did do everything that's, as I say, normally associated with acceptance responsibility. He pled in a timely fashion. He agreed to cooperate with the government in being debriefed. He did not in any way challenge the government's position in this case. And I think in that sense the factual finding of acceptance responsibility should have been made, and that it was clear for it not to have been made, because I think the court essentially was, in essence, punishing the defendant for this other conduct in a way that did not impact on whether or not he accepted his responsibility for the offense.
Now, was this conduct between the plea agreement and the sentencing?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
And so you're saying that conduct during that time should not be taken into consideration.
I think there are cases where it certainly can be. I mean, certainly in McDonald it was. In McDonald, when someone's continually coming up positive on urine tests and for marijuana and cocaine, it certainly is a circumstance that indicates that defendant has not terminated his criminal associations or criminal conduct.
What's the difference between that and just not coming in for your random drug testing?
Well, I think there's a difference in gravity, certainly. I think that, and I mean, I understand that the court's point, but again, I'm basically, my time is up, but my...
Well, you got a minute left. You want to save it, you better sit down.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning again. My name is Stephen Elke, and I'm with the United States Attorney's Office in Western District. This was Rita Rumbelow's case below and in the brief. McDonald, the failure and the reason that acceptance of responsibility wasn't granted was twofold. Number one, there were refusals by Mr. McDonald to submit to drug testing. And number two, on those occasions when he did, there were positive tests, four of them, I believe, for marijuana. So he had, you can infer, been engaged in illegal activity, consuming, you know, marijuana. And the court says at page 144, a district court also may consider a defendant's use of drugs and failure to comply with the terms of his release on bond. Unresolved in this circuit, and there's very little case law around the country, is the question of what if you had a pure, so to speak, violation of the terms of supervised release, and it wasn't a criminal violation beyond that. And I think that under 3E1.1 Application Note 3, the district court could nonetheless deny acceptance of responsibility. And so to some extent, trying to answer the court's question, this case would afford a vehicle to flush that out a little bit and specifically say that even non-criminal violations, but which would be violations of the pretrial release, would be sufficient in some situations to deny acceptance of responsibility. And in this case, Judge Shabazz clearly articulated his concerns and reasons for denying acceptance of responsibility in this case. Although the government maintained that acceptance should be granted, that's not the question here, of course. The question is whether clear error was committed. It certainly was not committed. Mr. Higgins was cited for a fourth degree operating while intoxicated citation prior to his plea. At the plea colloquy, Judge Shabazz specifically asked him, because in conjunction with determining whether he should release him for before sentencing, have you been complying with the terms and conditions of supervised release? Mr. Higgins says, yes, I have. So not only did he receive the citation, and it's undetermined whether he'll be found guilty of that yet, but he failed to report the law enforcement contact to the pretrial services officer when he was given the citation. He then has another chance to come clean at the plea hearing, and he doesn't tell Judge Shabazz that he's had the law enforcement contact. After the plea hearing, but before sentencing, he goes to California. Mr. Higgins goes to California without permission of his pretrial services agent, but merely leaves an answering machine message for her saying, I'm going to help my friend in California, and he was restricted to Wisconsin, so he violated in that way as well. So there is more than one occasion, it's over a period of months, flouting the pretrial services release rules, and Judge Shabazz clearly articulates that.
And I take it you don't think it would be punishment enough to simply revoke bond, because you're just talking about a couple of months, is that?
Well, and as Judge Shabazz says, when he comments on that, Mr. Higgins will, of course, get credit for that in his sentence. And this wasn't a situation where you had, in which you had a 0 to 6 range, and theoretically there'd be harm if the judge said 0 months. I mean, he was going to, and even if it were, I don't think it would be clear error, or any kind of error. Clear error would be, I suppose, a situation in which the person does everything properly, and let's say they come in at sentencing 10 minutes late, and they explain to the judge, well, I was in traffic, and maybe the judge said, well, you should have left 2 hours earlier to make sure. I mean, maybe that would be clear error if that was the only thing they did that violated their pretrial supervision. This case doesn't even come close to that. Judge Shabazz was correct in stating the reasons he did, and it is not clear error in this case, and it should be affirmed. Unless there are any questions, I don't have anything to add beyond what is in the brief. Thank you.
You have about a minute left.
I please the court. Your Honor, I think that may be the, you know, the most important question is the issue of whether or not this is intended to be punishment. I mean, the denial of acceptance of responsibility is intended to be punishment or a factual finding of whether or not the defendant did in fact accept responsibility. I think that was the problem with the way the court ruled in this case, that there was an understandable discomfort and anger perhaps with the defendant's conduct, and I agree that it was profoundly stupid conduct. But the question that even the government seems to be suggesting is that it's not resolved whether or not things that are simply violations of bond should be used as a basis for denial of acceptance responsibility. There is a difference, so I guess the government pointed out one additional difference between the McDonald case and this one. That case, in the McDonald case, the defendant actually refused the chemical test in addition to coming up positive for four times for marijuana and one time for cocaine. I think, Your Honor, that case is an illustration of a situation where the defendant did, in fact, was in fact found not to have terminated his criminal conduct and associations under the guideline, and that case was appropriate for denial. But this case was not. This case was simply violations of the bond, which were collateral to the issue of acceptance responsibility. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Peterson, I understand you were court appointed. Is that correct? Yeah, well, thanks very much for accepting the assignment.